Good morning, Shabbat Shalom, and welcome to United Israel World Union. This is our Sabbath morning scripture study. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. We are presently on a quest to discover the historical Moses. We've been doing this for several weeks. This is class number nine. And what I began last week within the broader context of the quest for the historical Moses, as part of our Honest to Moses series, I introduced sort of a slightly different class than what I had taught in the previous seven classes. And that was, I announced that during the course of this study, one of the things that I wanted to add in was some of what we might call Moses's greatest hits, you know, where we would begin to talk about some of those teachings which we can, with a fair degree of certainty, trace back to the historical Moses. And so last week, we talked about the stranger. We brought in that particular topic. I want to continue with that today, but I wanted to sort of, as a by way of introduction, is to clarify this point so that we understand, we're all on the same page, that we have basically two prongs to our approach. We have the man Moses, and we have the message. So the historical, the quest for the historical Moses that I'm presenting under the larger category of Honest to Moses will be classes that deal with the man Moses as well as the message of the man. And the message of the man and the story about the man himself is primarily made available to us through the Pentateuch, through the first five books of the Bible, specifically beginning with Exodus chapter 2. Once we get to Exodus chapter 2, through the remainder of Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, we're exposed to material about the man and the message, at least traditionally, the material that is ascribed to the man and his time, the man and his message. So it's primarily from these sources, beginning in Exodus chapter 2, that we get the most of our material from which we discern the content that we're bringing forward in these classes, the man and the message. Now, what we realize is that really, when you get down to it, this material provides very little in terms of the man. Now, we do get some, and we've covered a lot of that in the previous seven classes. We learn all the backstory in Genesis, so it's not, you have to continue to think about Genesis as well, because you get the backstory, but we get a little bit about the man. We know about his family. We know about the family into which he marries. We know about these various cultures that are around the man and in some degree the message of Moses. So, but we do get minimal information in terms of what we can learn about Moses. We get a lot more when it comes to the message. I think most of us would agree that when it comes to the message, we've got a lot more material to pull from. We're in a much better position. So when I talk about these greatest hits of Moses or these fundamental bedrock teachings that come from these five books around the message of Moses, what we're really dealing with is trying to discern the teaching of Moses. What is it that we learn from Moses that we can, with any degree of certainty, trace back to the historical figure of Moses? I want to begin this morning with a passage from the prophets. I want to begin in Malachi chapter 3 and verse 22. Now, if you're in an English Bible, you'll go to Malachi 4:4. So Malachi 4:4 in an English Bible, Malachi 3:22 in the Hebrew text. Remember, Zikru, remember the Torah of Moses, my servant, which I commanded him in Horeb for all Israel, both statutes and judgments. Now, in a way, this gives us the parameters of what one might expect to find in the Torah Moshe, the teaching of Moses. And I think all of those who listen to me, quite able students and scholars that you are, know that the word Torah, it's thrown around a lot. It's translated variously, law, but it technically and literally is best represented in English as the teaching of Moses. So this gives me a precedent for teaching on the teaching. I want to look for the teaching of Moses. What is it that we can discern about the teaching of Moses? Now, ironically, it is often the things that the Bible says remember that are most prominently forgotten among religious people. Remember the Sabbath day. A lot of people read the Bible and study the Bible, but they don't remember the Sabbath day. Remember the teaching of Moses. So that's what we're talking about. Now, nearly a year ago, about this time in the summer of 2020, I began a teaching series that went for 12 weeks, and it was part of what I was uncovering in my research, which led to at least a substantial part that made it into my book on what is it that can be associated with Moses. And that 12-part series is one of the most popular teachings that we've done, and I think that's because it challenges students of the Bible, but then it confirms what it is that we're talking about. It gives you the substantiation for what that Torah represents. So in our quest for the message of Moses, there are a couple of cautionary notes. And we have to proceed with caution on this journey as we begin to look for what can we, with a reasonable degree of certainty, attribute to Moses. We have to proceed with caution. We have to rely on the text. Now, even though I'm bringing forth some challenging materials, I want to make sure that you understand, and I made this point before, that I'm not being what some might call a liberal academic type, but I'm being very conservative. I'm relying on what the texts say. In my view, in my definition, someone who's not being conservative takes a lot of liberty with the text. Whereas I'm saying the text says what it means and means what it says if we trust it. But a lot of people aren't reading things as closely as I think that we should. So this is one of the main points. But that series that we taught, we're going to begin to move back into some of that material, this time a year later, with a lot more research behind it. And I think we can go a little bit further and we can take things to the logical end based on what we've learned so far. But within these texts, primarily I'm talking about the Pentateuch, the five books attributed to Moses, we have to really be looking for what does the text tell us about Moses and his time, okay? Both of these are important. In other words, I'm going to propose to you, and I want people to understand this up front, that some things we are more certain are associated with Moses and his time than others, okay? Now, I don't see this as a negative enterprise, and I don't want you to see this as a negative enterprise. I don't want people to be a little bit scared about this, because what I'm going to do is, again, I'm going to rely on the text, and we're going to go to these sources and read directly from the text and let the text tell us what it is that it has to say. Now, some I recognize. Some are perfectly happy to accept the traditional view that all of the material in the Pentateuch is attributable to Moses and his time. The traditional view is that Moses wrote Genesis 1:1 through Deuteronomy chapter 34 and verse 12. That's the traditional view, and a lot of people are fine with that. But there are others, and I am among this group of others who desire to know, no matter what. I want to know with as much certainty as we can discern from the text what actually goes back to Moses, the man, the message, and the time. Now, I have to be honest with you. I have been asked in various communications that I've received over the past couple of years. Some have asked me with a little bit of concern, what's going to be left, Ross? If you take this approach, if you go through the text and you challenge that some of this goes back to the historical Moses, what's left? I mean, if we say, well, this obviously is a later interpolation, if this doesn't appear to go back to Moses, there's some concern there. And I want to alleviate some of that concern. I want to say that the answer to the question, what will be left? Are you ready for the answer? The truth. The truth, as far as we can discern it, we can state that rather succinctly and rather certainly, that what we're getting back to is precisely that which can be determined to go back to Moses and the message. Now, there's another thing that I want to bring into this equation, and that is that there are things which we need to make. The reason that I want to go through this difficult thing and this deep study with you, first of all, I know that you're ready. People know that when they listen to me or anyone who takes the position of a teacher, you have every right to say, you didn't prove your point. I'm not going there. I stop here. I mean, people do this all the time. You make the determination. There's no one here forcing you to follow along in every detail. But I want to make sure, because in Deuteronomy chapter 4 and verse 2, go with me there. Let me pick up a couple of these first thing this morning. Deuteronomy chapter 4 and verse 2 says this. And let me back up to verse 1. Deuteronomy 4, 1. Now therefore, hearken, O Israel, to the statutes and to the judgments which I teach you. Notice, first person, Moses. To do them, that you may live and go in and possess the land which the Lord God of your fathers gives you. You shall not add to the word which I command you, neither shall you diminish from it, that you may keep the commandments of the Lord your God which I command you. Now that warning, don't add to and don't take away. What I'm alleging is that based upon what we read here and what we find as we study this particular avenue that we're going, we're going to see that this has been expanded. Remember in Malachi 3:22, 4:4 in the English, it says, remember the teaching of Moses, which he commanded you at Horeb, statutes and judgments. And this here talks about those statutes and judgments and says, don't add to or take away. Look at Deuteronomy 13. Because what if it has been added to? What if it has been diminished from? Is there a way to recover that which it originally said? So if you look at, again, in the English, I think it's going to be chapter 12 of Deuteronomy, verse 32. In the Hebrew, it's chapter 13, verse 1. It's a repetition of what we read in 4. Every matter which I command you, observe to do, you shall not add thereto, nor diminish therefrom. Now, if, let's say, there are things which someone else is credited as saying that originate with Moses, that becomes a difficulty. We want to give proper attribution. We want to make sure that we say that Moses said only what Moses said, and that which others have said, we want to separate, we want to distinguish. That's what I'm trying to do here. I just want to make a distinction when it comes to what we can determine goes back to Moses. So what shines forth when we begin to take a very close look at, when we begin to analyze these texts, what shines forth is a core message. And what we will find is that it really comes down to what some have referred to as the weightier matters of the law, the more substantive things which can go back to Moses. Now, that's not to say, everybody take a deep breath, that's not to say that we put away the other things, that we're throwing anything out. We're not. What we want to do is simply identify that which is Moses, that which is another voice or another hand. It doesn't mean that we can't appreciate the whole. My aim is to recognize through a careful analysis that which we can determine belongs to Moses and his time. Now, when we talk about that which we can put to Moses, we're in a pretty good position. And how can I say that? Because I don't want people to think, well, you're just picking and choosing. Absolutely not. What we have that's very clear and it stands out is we have this distinction that can be made between first and third person. If we look at most of the Pentateuch, we find hundreds, literally hundreds of references in narrative primarily, also comes into the genre of legalistic text and so forth, where it refers to Moses in the third person. The Lord spoke unto Moses saying, you can go through, I encourage you to go through from Exodus all the way through the book of Numbers, and you will only find third person material. The Lord spoke unto Moses. There's not a single example of first person. What do I mean by first person? And the Lord spoke unto me. We get that first person narrative only in the book of Deuteronomy. Now, again, this material that's in Exodus through Numbers, I'm not suggesting that it be out. It's recorded by another hand is all I'm saying. The Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, you and Aaron do such and such. Could that be written by a scribe who's right there? That's not deniable. It could very well be. But what I want to do again is focus on that first person. So there are things that Moses likely didn't write. And I think most will admit this, and they have done so from at least the medieval times when the rabbis were commenting on this. Here's an example. And Moses, the servant of the Lord, died, and he was buried. Okay? From the earliest times, people say, the tradition is, Moses wrote the entirety of the five books. But they'll say, but he didn't write this because it records his own death. Well, that's pretty obvious. One thing dead people often don't do is write. And that becomes sort of a hinchpin for this idea that some things, even if it's minimal, some things were not written by Moses. Another thing that stood out to those early people who were searching this question out, Moses was the meekest man in all the earth. one thing that the meekest man in all the earth is unlikely to have written is that Moses is the meekest man in all the earth, right? And again, it doesn't mean to suggest that Moses was not the meekest man in all the land. It's just simply to say that that indicates to most people who carefully read the text that it was written by another. That's the only point we're trying to make. Now, when it comes to the time of Moses, that which is written during the time of Moses, we have some things that are also clues for us in the text. There is a thing called anachronism. This is somewhat of a repetition if you were listening a year ago, but I'm building up to something significant. But anachronism is when a non-contemporary phrase is used in a source. So you're reading along, and it makes a reference to another time. Often included in that reference to another time is another geography or another geographical place. So some things give themselves away within the text which preclude an identification of Mosaic authorship. So if you read somewhere, we notice certain phrases that play in that indicate that it was written later. For instance, Deuteronomy chapter 1, verse 1 says, these are the words which Moses spoke, notice third person, in the land of Moab, across on the other side of the Jordan. So that tells us that the writer is situated west of the Jordan, referring to the words that Moses spoke on the other side at another time in another place. Okay? Again, it doesn't take away and it shouldn't destroy anyone's faith. It should enhance our understanding because we identify that which was written later or by another hand or both. In many cases, it's both. Now, this week, I plan to not go through things which might be so challenging, but I want to reaffirm something very important. Last week, we talked about the phrase ger. We talked about the word ger, which is translated as a sojourner or a stranger, an alien. And we talked about how more than 50 times in the Hebrew Bible, more than 50 times in the Pentateuch, I should say, in the five books attributed to Moses, this idea of proper treatment of the stranger and how it crosses over in every book, we see it so frequently, we can, with a very strong degree of certainty, attribute this to the message of Moses. This kind treatment of the alien, of the stranger, of the sojourner. And it even, not only does it tell us in broad terms that we must treat the stranger, the sojourner, with great respect, and it goes through all the things we covered last week. Leave some things from your gleaning. Don't take everything from the orchards or from the fields. Allow the stranger and those who have nothing to have some of that. We learned last week that the stranger is also under the same obligation as the native born, that the same law applies. One Torah will be for the stranger as well as the native born. So they're part of the group. Whenever you rejoice because of your great harvest, you are to include in that rejoicing the stranger. Last week, we touched on something which brings us into this week's class, which I also put clearly within the message of Moses, one of the most profound teachings in the Hebrew Bible, one of Moses' greatest hits. Not only are we to properly treat the stranger, the ger, but it says you are to love the ger. You are to love. And I want you to look with me this morning at Leviticus chapter 19. Leviticus chapter 19. in verse 34. I closed my class last week saying that I wanted to talk a little bit about love of God and for God and what that biblical love means in terms of the teaching of Moses. How do you define love as Moses goes, okay? So we're going to look at first Leviticus 19:34, begin in 33. And if a stranger sojourn, in Hebrew, v'ki yagor itka ger, and if a stranger sojourns with you in your land, you shall not wrong him. But the stranger that dwells with you shall be to you as one born among you, and you shall love him as yourself. And then it even gives a reason. Because you were strangers, you were ger in the land of Egypt. I am Jehovah your God. So we saw example after example last week where one of the main drivers about this love of the stranger is you know how the stranger feels. You know the Hebrew says, you know the soul of the stranger. Therefore, you're going to treat them this way. And then it's underscored with, I am Jehovah your God. Now, go back with me to Leviticus 19, and let's look at verse 17. And by the way, these come from what is called the Holiness Code. Leviticus 19 primarily is the bulk of what's called by scholars the Holiness Code. Verse 17 of 19. You shall not hate your brother in your heart. You shall certainly rebuke your neighbor and not suffer sin on his account. You shall not avenge nor bear any grudge against the children of your people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I am Jehovah. I am Jehovah. Now, let me ask you something. I know that you know that this goes back, it's attributed to Moses. It's attributed to the pen of Moses in many ways because we find it in that book, that five-book volume or that five-volume book, which is attributed, at least traditionally, to Moses. But what do many people, who do many people give credit for this saying? Many people think of Christianity when they think of love your neighbor as yourself or don't hate your neighbor in your heart. But this goes back before the time of the Second Temple period, right? This is not a Jesus original. Now, it's wonderful that Christianity has embraced this. I mean, it truly, truly is. It's the shining light of Christianity is that they have embraced a Torah principle which goes back to Moses. But have you ever heard a remake of a song that becomes very, very popular, and then you have that one friend, like I have the Tylers, and they know everything about music forever, and they'll say, well, they're not the original who did that. And you're like, what? Right? What if there are things which others have been given credit for because they made it popular, but it goes back to Moses? Now, the sad thing is that many of the things that we read in the Torah, in the five books in the Pentateuch, that people look negatively upon, they give those to Moses. You know, you read something and God demonstrates a very harshness or whatever, and people go, yeah, that's the Old Testament. That's Moses. That's the law. And you go, well, what about your belief? And they say, well, our belief is about love. And you say, well, how so? Love your neighbor as yourself. You're like, well, that goes back to Moses too. They say, yeah, but you believe in the law, circumcision of flesh. We believe in circumcision of heart. That's the New Testament thing. You're like, well, actually, that goes back to Moses too. So what I want to do is I want to make sure that as we look at and identify things which go back to Moses, is let's let people know that this begins with the Moses pen. This begins with the scribe in the time of Moses, not in the Second Temple period. Again, it's wonderful that a later artist makes a song popular, but let's give credit where credit is due, shall we? That's one of the main points of this particular class. We're going to talk today about love. And when I talk about love, I'm not just talking about an emotion, you know. I'm not just talking about that, but I want to know what is the Torah's idea about love. Particularly, I'm interested in God's love, the love of God for His people, and the love of what brings us into that loving relationship with the Creator. That's the main point. And what does Moses have to say about that? Now, in the Pentateuch, we have expressions, quite a few expressions about human love. Like, and it's the same then as it is now, I'm fairly certain. I mean, love has always been, you know, when a person, I started to break in, when a man loves a woman. But when a person falls in love with another person, we have examples of that. Abraham, well, first of all, it's not just a man and a woman here. You have a man and his son. Abraham, we talk about in Genesis 22:2, where it says, take now your son Isaac, whom you love. You know, this idea of love, familial love, family love. Well, we get that with Abraham and Isaac. Isaac's love for Rebekah, in Genesis 24, verse 67, it talks about this very strong love that Isaac had for Rebekah. We get this also, Jacob's love for Rachel, in Genesis 29, verses 18, verse 20, and verse 30 of Genesis 29. Jacob loved Rachel. And he loves Rachel more so than he loves Leah. So we see grades or degrees of love and affection in these books. And then we see another story of a man and his love for his son when we read the story about how Jacob or Israel had this love for Joseph, which exceeded the love that he had for his other children. In Genesis 37, verses 3 through 4, Jacob truly loves Israel. But within the text of the Pentateuch, within these five books, we have a few examples of what I want to talk about under the category of commanded love. There's no command, so to speak, that says you shall love this person and this person and this person other than what is commanded. And what is commanded is very clear. We read in Leviticus 19 is one example. We read there that we are to love the stranger as yourself in Leviticus 19, 34. In Leviticus 19, verses 17 through 18, we read that we are to love our neighbor, kamocha, like yourself. Now, this brings to the point that in some ways you're to love yourself, you know? Because if a person hates themselves, how can they love their neighbor? And if they do love their neighbor according to the standard by which they don't love themselves, that's not what the aim is. The aim is to, as Jesus put it, which is a good way to think about it, don't do what you wouldn't want done to you, don't do to another person. Or as the Rabbi Hillel says, you know, what is hateful to you, don't do to another person. The idea is to convey the same affection for others that you would to yourself. That's the kind of love. But I want to look at specifically love of and for Jehovah. Commanded love, I want you to understand, is the basis of God's dealing with his people. Love, believe it or not, for those who haven't felt a connection with the covenants of the Hebrew Bible, they've only known from a later testament about God's dealing with people that they would consider the latter to be about love and the former to be about law. This really, I'm talking about a law of love. What if the world began to view the teaching of Moses as a law of love? It's something which hasn't been done, at least not on a frequency with which it should be. People don't think, when you say law, or you say the Torah, or the Hebrew Bible, or the Old Testament, people don't think love is not what comes to their mind first, right? They think of stricture and rules and regulations and all those kind of things. Touch not, taste not, don't eat this, eat this, keep this day, don't keep that day. You know, that's their understanding of it. Certainly, love doesn't make the list. If you were playing Jeopardy and you were called up to the stand and you're playing, is that the one where the two families go against each other? What is it? Something else. Anyway, Family Feud or whatever. And they asked a question, survey says, top five answers are on the board. When I say the law of Moses and people jump to the buzzer, what do you think? Would they say love? Probably not. We need to change that. That's what this class is about today. Commanded love is tied directly to chosenness. Love is the basis of this covenant. Abraham is called the friend of God. Look with me at Isaiah 41:8. And it says there, these you ought to have memorized, Isaiah 41:8. But you, Israel, are my servant, Jacob, whom I have chosen, the seed of Abraham, my friend. In Hebrew, ohavi. The root word there, ahav, means love. So many of you know this, but I want to stress this point, that it all goes back to a love affair, if you will, between God and Avram, later known as Avraham. It's Abraham is God's beloved. He is a lover of God, and he is God's lover. Now look with me for another example of this. Second Chronicles chapter 20 and verse 7. It says, are you not our God who did drive out the inhabitants of this land before your people Israel and did give it to the seed of Abraham, your friend, forever? Again, Abraham, your friend, is ohavcha, your beloved. In fact, I like that better. It's not that friend in English doesn't quite convey, at least according to the way that we define it, with the strength of this Hebrew word, ahav. Abraham is the beloved of God, and that's the way that should be translated. So our relationship, the relationship of God's people with God, is not only based on love, but it goes back to a love affair between God and Abraham. And I know in the way that we think, that may not sound exactly right, but it's what it is. God loves Abraham. And because of that love, that boundless, eternal love which he had with Abraham, the benefits carry on into today. Look with me at Deuteronomy chapter 4. Deuteronomy chapter 4 and verse 37. And when you finish with this class, if anybody ever says the law of Moses, you'll hit the buzzer and say love. It's all about love. Deuteronomy 4:37, and because he, talking about Jehovah, loved your fathers, therefore he chose their seed after them and brought you out, he himself being present with his mighty power out of Egypt. And it goes on. It's because of the love that he had for the patriarchs. It's an eternal, boundless, abundant love upon which the covenant is based. It's a law of love. I don't like law when I'm thinking about Torah, but I'm doing this because a lot of people immediately go, Torah, and they say, oh, the law of Moses. No, it's not the law of Moses at all. It's the teaching of Moses, but I'm saying, if you're going to call it law, at least get what it's about. At its core, the law is about love. Now look with me, Deuteronomy 10, verse 15. And it says, only Jehovah took delight in your fathers to love them, and he chose their seed after them, even you above all people, as it is this day. It goes back to the love that God had for the fathers. Now, go back to Deuteronomy 4. I did this on purpose because a lot of you were saying, well, why didn't you read this? Because I wanted to do it this way. Deuteronomy 4. Now we're going to begin in verse 35. To you it was shown. Now this is talking about the marvelous rescue of Israel out of Egypt. That's the referent here. To you it was shown that you might know that Jehovah, he is God. Let's see. Okay. Hold on one second. Verse 35, to you it was shown that you might know that Jehovah, he is God. There is none else beside him. Out of heaven he made you hear his voice, that he might instruct you. And upon earth he showed you his great fire, and you did hear his words out of the midst of the fire. And because he loved your fathers, therefore he chose their seed after them and brought you out, he himself being present with his mighty power out of Egypt to drive out nations before you greater and mightier than thou art, to bring you in, to give you their land for an inheritance, as it is this day. Know therefore this day, and consider it in your heart, that Jehovah, Hu Ha Elohim, he is God in heaven above and upon the earth beneath, Ein Od. There is no other. You shall therefore keep his statutes and his commandments, which I command you this day, that it may go well with you and with your children after you, that you may prolong your days upon the earth, which Jehovah your God gives you forever. The commanded love is situated in this passage. It's a covenant text. It deals with, if you look at what I read between verse 35, which deals with a message of the oneness, a witness to the oneness in verse 35. Verse 39 is also a witness to the oneness. And in the middle of that is a love. It's a testament that we are to proclaim the oneness of God. Why? Because God loved us and he's got this covenant with us. And then that brings us to the point where there's a message of the oneness again. You see how that sort of, that commandment to love is at the heart of a relationship surrounded by this testament to the oneness. Now look with me on that same note, Deuteronomy chapter 6. Deuteronomy chapter 6. And beginning in verse 4. Deuteronomy 6, 4. Hear, O Israel. Everybody knows this, right? This is a Shema. Of course, people know this. Hear, O Israel, Jehovah our God, Jehovah is one. And you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your everything. And these words which I command you this day shall be on your heart. And you shall teach them diligently to your children. You shall talk about them when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way, when you lie down and when you rise up. And you shall bind them for a sign on your arm, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. And you shall write them upon the doorpost of your house and on your gates. Again, the oneness and the proclamation thereof, and the fact that you are to write these words on your heart, it's about the love of God. And you shall, it's called in Hebrew, the Jewish tradition refers to this as the Ahavta, because Ahavta in Hebrew is you shall love. It's commanded. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. And you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart. Notice, the commandment is not, there's a command to listen that to the statement about the oneness, but you shall understand this. Here, Israel, Jehovah our God, Jehovah is one, and you shall love Jehovah. This is the commandment, and you shall write these words on your heart. Which words? Could it have to do, at least in part, with the love of God? And is that what we're supposed to teach our children? Incising it in their heart? Is that what we're supposed to talk about when we lie down and when we rise, when we're in our home, when we're out of our home, when we're on our way, when we're in it? Yes. And yet, it's the core. Remember the Torah of Moses, which he commanded you, statutes and judgments. And yet, it's not what's remembered. It's not the thing that comes first to mind. The way this should have played out is that today, had we done this right throughout the ages, anytime somebody said Moses or the Torah, people would say it has to do with the love of God. That's what this should have been. Should have been the first answer, top one on the list. Survey says love, 55 points. It's not even on the list today, and that's the tragedy. Look with me at Deuteronomy 10. See, we're going back. You think, well, he should have done that when he was there before. Trust me here, I know. Deuteronomy 10, 12. And now, Israel, what does Jehovah your God require of you? This is a good question. But to fear Jehovah your God, to walk in all his ways, and to love him, and to love him, and to love him, and to serve Jehovah your God with all your heart, with all your soul, to keep the commandments of Jehovah and his statutes, which I command you this day, for your good. Behold, the heaven and the heaven of heavens belong to Jehovah your God, the earth also with all that is on it. Only Jehovah took delight in your fathers to love them, and he chose their seed after them, even you above all people as it is this day. Circumcise, therefore, the foreskin of your heart, and be stiff-necked no more. Let's keep reading. By the way, note this. It's here in Deuteronomy 10. It's also in Deuteronomy 30. Circumcision of heart is a part of the law. It's the law of love. It has to do with the message of the heart. For Jehovah, verse 17, your God is God of gods and Lord of lords, a great God, a mighty and terrible, who favors no person and takes no bribe. He executes judgment of the fatherless and widow and loves the stranger. It's about love, giving him food and raiment. Love, therefore, the stranger. It's about love. For you were strangers in the land of Egypt. You shall fear Jehovah your God. Him shall you serve, and to him you shall hold fast, and swear by his name. He is your praise. He is your God who has done that for you great and terrible things which your eyes have seen. Your fathers went down to Egypt with 70 persons, and now Jehovah your God has made you as the stars of heaven for multitude. Therefore you shall love Jehovah your God, keep his charge, his statutes, his judgments, and his commandments always. Now, I read love probably five times in those few verses. But you know what they get out of this, most people? If you ask them, what did Ross just say? They'll say, God's terrible. God's an awesome God. Fear God. Fear God. You know, they don't, the love part, it's like someone has whispered it. And you shall love the Lord your God. And then it goes back to the loudness. It's I want the loudness with love. It needs to be spoken, proclaimed from the rooftops. Look with me down at verse 13 of chapter 11. It shall come to pass, if you hearken diligently to my commandments, which I command you this day, to love the Lord your God, and to serve him with all your heart and with all your soul, that I will give you the rain of your land in its season, the early and the latter rain, that you may gather in your corn, your wine, your oil, and I'll send grass in the fields for your cattle. It's all the blessings. You know what the blessings go back to? Love. Love. It shall come to pass, if you listen diligently to my commandments, which I command you this day, to love the Lord your God. It's the root of everything. It goes back to love. And all of these blessings are tied into this love relationship. Look at verse 22 of chapter 11. For if you shall diligently keep all these commandments which I command you to do them, to love the Lord your God, to walk in his ways, and to hold fast to him, then will Jehovah drive out the nations from before you. The positive results, God moving on behalf of the people, is tied to the love that God had for the patriarchs, but it's also contingent on that love relationship being carried forward. Look at chapter 30 of Deuteronomy. And by the way, I think it's obvious based on context, but this love is more than a feeling. It's more than emotion. It requires obedience. Love, to keep the commandments, the judgments, and the statutes. Now, the question becomes, which ones? Which is part of the reason that we're studying to find out what is it that Moses actually commanded. It's important to know. We need to categorize what comes from Moses, which came from God. So it goes God, Moses, people. Are there other things which we have attributed to Moses that aren't? It's very important because we're supposed to remember that which God commanded to Moses, the teaching of Moses. Now look at chapter 30, verse 15. See, I've set before you this day life and good, death and evil, in that I commanded you this day to love the Lord your God, to walk in his ways, to keep his commandments and his statutes and his judgments. Then you shall live and multiply, and Jehovah your God shall bless you in the land into which you go to possess it. And then it goes into what happens if you don't. But it's contingent on you loving the Lord your God, which is demonstrated by keeping that which God commanded. It's a path. It's never does it say in any of the books of the Bible, love God and don't keep his commandments. Right? Love does not take away the obligation for obedience. You know, it's like in any relationship. If you say, you know, I love you, dear, and that person is forced to say, well, you sure don't show it. Your actions speak louder than words. You can say to someone you love them, but that doesn't always cut it. It doesn't always demonstrate that you do. We have to learn this. Some of us are slower on the uptake than others. Most of the men out there would probably have at some point or another heard this, and some women. But a lot of men have probably heard, well, if you love me, you need to show me. And how do you show? You demonstrate this love, according to the Torah, by keeping the judgments and statutes and that which God commanded. Now, this love relationship is essential and beneficial and yields great reward. Look at Deuteronomy chapter 5. Deuteronomy 5 and verse 10. Now, again, this is from the Hebrew, the verses, but it's in the 10 words. This is engraved in stone. Love made the list. Love made the ten means that Jehovah wrote the word Ahav. Now notice how he writes it. Verse 10. Well, let's start in verse 9. You shall not bow down to them nor serve them, for I, Jehovah your God, am a jealous God, punishing the iniquity of the fathers upon children to the third and fourth of those who hate me, but showing mercy to the thousandth generation of those who love me and keep my commandments. So people say, you know, I want that blessing. I'm going to raise my hand. I'm blessed, I'm blessed, I'm blessed. You're like, well, are you keeping the commandments? And no, I don't have to keep the commandments. That's the law. The law of love associates the guarding and doing of the commandments with that relationship. It's the way that we show God our love for him, right? Now, that's also in Exodus chapter 20 and verse 6, but we're dealing with Deuteronomy for a very particular reason. Go with me to Deuteronomy 7, Deuteronomy 7 and verse 6. And these words which I command you this day shall be in your heart, and you shall, chapter 7, verse 6, not 6, verse 7. That's good too, but we already read that. For you are a holy people to Jehovah your God. Jehovah your God has chosen you to be a special people to himself, above all people that are on the face of the earth. Jehovah did not set his love upon you or choose you because you were more in number than any people, for you were the fewest of all people, but because Jehovah loved you, and because he would keep the oath that he swore to your fathers, has Jehovah brought you out with a mighty hand and redeemed you out of the house of bondmen from the hand of Pharaoh, the king of Egypt. Know therefore that Jehovah your God, he is God, the faithful God, who keeps covenant and troth from with those who love him and keep his commandments to a thousand generations. Pretty clear? Look down at verse 12. Wherefore it shall come to pass, if you hearken to these judgments and keep and do them, that Jehovah your God shall keep unto you the covenant and the troth, that's the word that translates here, which he swore to your fathers, and he will love you and bless you and multiply you and will bless the fruit of your womb and the fruit of your land, your corn, your wine, your oil, the increase of your cattle, the flock of your sheep, on and on and on. Notice that? If you listen to these judgments and guard and do and keep and so forth, then he will love you and bless you. So a person who says, I just love the Lord. I love the Lord. You really love the Lord? I love the Lord. But yet they don't even try to keep the commandment. In fact, they've been told you can't, you shouldn't. That's somehow equated, which is associated with a bad thing, to try to earn your salvation, which is a big, bad woe. You shouldn't do that. But it's associated with all sorts of crazy things, like falling from grace if you try to do these things. Well, I mean, the law of love, the heart and soul, the core of the teaching is about love, demonstrable love, love that is demonstrated through obedience to that which God commanded through the hand of Moses. So it's incumbent on us to discern that which can be traced to Moses. Because if we're attributing things to Moses and this love-based law that can't be attributed, then we get confused on our understanding of love. Does love demand us to offer our firstborn, our sacrifices? Does love require that? I mean, seems like I remember reading somewhere in Micah that that's not the case. What can be associated with the core law of love? This is where we're going. Now, look with me. Love in its truest form is initiated by God. But at least in response to it, look at Deuteronomy 30 and verse 6. Deuteronomy 30 and verse 6. And Jehovah your God will circumcise your heart and the heart of your seed to love Jehovah your God with all your heart and with all your soul, that you may live. Now remember in Deuteronomy 10, it says to circumcise your heart. Keep the commandments and so forth, circumcise your heart. Here, it says that God is going to do it. So the point needs to be understood that it seems to be a two-way relationship. We should make every effort to sensitize our heart in love towards the Creator and keep His teachings. And at the same time, God will meet us in His love and help us along the way. It's a two-part street, as is every loving relationship that is true and real and lasting. One-way love typically does not work. Some say, well, it might last. Well, it might last, but not in a sense that I'm talking about. It has to be reciprocal. Now look at verse 19 of chapter 30. I call heaven and earth to witness this day against you, that I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore choose life, that both you and your seed may live, that you may love Jehovah your God, that you may obey His voice, and that you may cleave to Him, for He is your life, the length of your days, that you may dwell in the land which Jehovah swore to your fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, to give them. Love forms the basis for everything when it comes to the teaching. It's not Torah faith can never be or become simply an intellectual exercise. It can't be just that. Like, we're talking about all sorts of intellectual things. We're talking about careful study of the text, looking for sources and authors, and, you know, that can become somewhat intellectual, something of the head. One thing we have to acknowledge and live by is that the heart of the law is in this love. But neither, just like it can't become simply an intellectual exercise, it can never be simply and solely an emotional exercise. It's not enough to say, I just love the Lord. Doesn't matter how often we raise our hands or shake them to the heavens. Saying we love God is not the same as loving God. And if we're careful in our reading, we understand based on everything that we've covered today that God's love is reciprocal to those who demonstrate their love to Him by keeping the commandments. You say, does that mean God doesn't love everyone? What does it say? Now, I know that some have said, you know, God, what is the phrase that people have come up with? It's not biblical, but He loves the sinner and hates the sin. Well, go read Deuteronomy 5 again. Go read Exodus 20 again. Go read Deuteronomy 7 again. Who does God love? And what is the basis of that love? Love is demonstrable. It is. It requires more than words. It requires our obedience. Love is commanded. But so, not only the love of God, but the love of our neighbor, love of the stranger, these that we might not be so easy to love. Let me tell you what, it's a lot easier to say you love God than to love somebody with a face. It really is. It's easier when you say, oh, I just love God, and you can treat somebody right here in a bad way, you know, and you think, well, that's no big deal. I think we ought to really examine that. Perhaps the historical Jesus really got this one right. Maybe more so than anybody in history stated it so succinctly. When an expert in the Torah asked the historical Jesus, and I'm making a distinction, just like I'm doing with Moses. I want to know who was the real Jesus of Nazareth, the historical Yeshua. When he was asked, what's the most important commandment? This is at least attributed to him. He said, the most important commandment is, Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad. And he continues, and you shall love Jehovah your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your everything. He gives them more than they asked for, and he said, and the second one is this, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. There is no greater commandment than these. Now, I know that our audience has people who are from different faiths. There are some who are Christian in their orientation. There are some who don't want anything to do with that. They think that anything from Christianity, their past, typically, they don't want anything to do with. But truth is truth. There is no other commandment greater than these. I agree. No truer words have ever been said. The basis for the law is love. Love God and love your neighbor. Love your stranger. Love yourself. It's the basis of everything. The Shema is really more of a declaration of the oneness, really. It's a witness to the oneness. And at the heart, every time almost that we read about the declaration of the oneness, it's tied to this loving relationship between God and His people. So a lot of people are running around quoting the Shema because they think, well, I've got the intellectual, I've got the theology, I've got the doctrine right, there's one God. Yeah, well, guess what goes with that? A love. Love of God, love of neighbor. When it comes to the greatest commandments, it has to do with love. And often, overlooked point, as I started with today, this is often credited to Jesus of Nazareth. What Jesus of Nazareth did was he took the greatest hit of Moses and he presented it to the world. But it goes back to Moses. So I want to say, let's do that. Let's make sure that anytime somebody talks about you shall love God or love your neighbor as yourself or anything like that, you say, you know, the original artist of that was Moses. And when they say, really? And you say, absolutely. Moses had this really nice album that came out. It was about loving God, loving your neighbor, loving the stranger. It even had this smash hit that some of you don't know, about circumcision of heart. That was a great song back in the day. People say, I thought Paul came up with that in Romans 2:28. You're like, Paul? No, he just remade it. Now, again, I'm not ridiculing. I'm glad those songs were remade by later artists. But the original author is Moses. Give credit where credit is due. Attribute to Moses that which belongs to Moses. Quote, if I write a book and I don't quote the original author and I take credit for something someone else said, I can get in trouble. That's called infringement, copyright infringement or something like that, right? So you want to make sure, we want to attribute to Moses what he said, only what he said. And that's the reason that we're taking such care to go through these things and not be so concerned about what we've been taught from tradition, but focus on the scriptures themselves. Trust the text. What does it say? Now, the question that this raises is what other bedrock, ethical, moral teachings can be traced back to Moses as the original? What else is there? What else did this Torah of Moses have in it? That's the reason for this particular quest. We're going to continue in the next few weeks to go through further into the text, and we're going to be looking for that which Moses said, and what are some of these greatest teachings that can be attributed to Mosaic authorship. Thank you so much for joining us. Shabbat Shalom, Shavua Tov. We'll see you next week.